We're talking with Gordon Lightfoot, who is in town tonight for a couple of shows at Northrop Auditorium. Gordon, thanks a lot for stopping out to KQ today and talking with us.
My pleasure indeed.
It's good to have you back. You're here a year ago. You come here about it once a year, don't you?
Yeah, it's come down to that. We have a good solid following in this area, and it's come down to a yearly engagement.
You have a band with you this time?
Oh, yeah.
On the road? Yeah. I saw you a couple years ago. I don't think I saw you last year, but you did some really nice things with just two people, your bass player and...
Well, we've expanded that now. So we have the basic... we've got a full rhythm section now, which makes it a lot nicer. I enjoy it a lot more anyway.
You do?
Yeah.
You like that better than...
just playing with the three guys, yeah.
It was really nice and clean, though, when I heard it. I mean, it was sort of a nice venue or a nice way to hear your music.
Oh, it'll be clean.
I'm sure it will be.
We'll keep it clean.
Well, what do you think of the album? I've heard that you think it's one of the best you've ever done.
I do. I know that we spent... Now, I don't know if I can gauge that by the amount of time I spent on it or not.
Why?
Well, it's got kind of like a mixed review because of the large orchestration that's involved in it, but it's not over-arranged or over-orchestrated, I don't think. And a lot of what people are hearing are guitar overdubs, too, that I'm playing on my high-string guitar.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of difference from this album than there is from, say, Don Quixote or something, where you're... You know, you're basically hearing one guitar and very simple arrangements. But I think it sounds good. It's the single is coming along, Circle is Small.
You mean you don't think it sounds great?
I think it sounds great.
I'm sorry.
No, you don't have to apologize. There are a lot of really good songs on it. I was listening to it a little earlier, and it seems like just about half of the songs, you can pick up the melody right away and whistle along with it. Yeah. Do you do that consciously, or does that just come to you?
Well, I don't know. A whistleable tune, you know, that's one of the trademarks of a good song, is when you can sort of latch onto it fairly quick. Mm-hmm. And one of the other trademarks is when you can sing it over and over again and never get tired of it, which is the way I handle all of the past material that I do, because we try to do as much old material as possible in the time it's allotted. And as much of the new stuff as we can work in there.
You've got a lot to do. Is there any one of your real big hits of the past that you don't do anymore? Like, If You Could Read My Mind, you still do that?
We always do that one.
Yeah.
It's a good song.
Yeah, it was really big.
We do all of the really important songs, with the exception that sometimes we alternate between Early Morning Rain and the Canadian Railroad Trilogy as a closing number. Or sometimes I do both of them.
God, I love both of those. I'm glad you're still doing them.
We've been doing both of them this spring because, if you can call it this spring, because I can't remember now which places I sang Early Morning Rain in and which places I sang Trilogy in. We're doing them both this year.
Write it down from now on. Yeah. You have been, I know this sounds really, you know, I don't want to make you feel like a grandfather or anything, but you have been around really a long time.
I might be before you know it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You've been doing music for a long time, doing the old folk festivals out east with Bob Dylan when he was starting out, and Joan Baez and people like that. And I don't know if too many people know that you are from Canada, but that's where you started out, right?
Yeah, I still live up there.
Where do you live?
Toronto. But I was in, like, the early Newport folk festivals, and that was quite thrilling to me. I wasn't that well known or that well qualified at that point. I was never featured as a headliner at that point in my career or anything like that, but it was a lot of fun being around those people. Bob Dylan and I were with the same manager for a long time, and Ian and Sylvia, back in those early days.
They're a Canadian act, too, right?
Yeah.
Are they still together?
Yes, I believe they are, and there was Peter, Paul, and Mary, and Richie Havens, and all those people.
What's your perception of how your music has changed in those years? That's been about 10, 13, 15 years almost, hasn't it?
Well, I hate to say it, but it's been longer than that. I've been professionally full-time into it since I was 19, and that's like 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, Like, I always wanted to be in the music business. Even before I got out of public school, I was starting to get ideas along that line. And I was singing in competition and doing all that kind of stuff when I was just a boy singer.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of got my feet wet that way, and then started getting serious about it when I got in high school. So then a friend of mine who were listening to, at that time, to Stan Kenton and Dave Brubeck and all these people, we saw an ad in Downbeat magazine at that time. And rather than go on to university, he and I, who were just leaving high school, split and went to California to study the theory of orchestration, which I did for 14 months. And that's been invaluable to me through the years, because I can write music and I have a good idea of orchestration.
Does the whole music scene thing that's been coming down with a lot of changes in music, especially with young people getting into maybe regressing, I don't know if that's the right word or not, but going back to some of the harder stuff, affecting your music at all? Or are you just going to roll along and pretty much do what you want?
Yeah, I'm going to have to try and do my own thing, you know, basically. I have been going through a sort of process of refinement, I think, all my life, just trying to improve upon things, and things that sounded callow and amateurish to me years and years ago. You know, that sounds to me like that now. When I relate back to, over the years, the 13 albums which I have made, the 13 original albums, I think it's come gradually quite a long way. Now, adding the full rhythm section here a couple of years ago was a major step. And adding a steel player who assimilates string parts and does all that sort of thing has been a good move, and now it's a five-piece band, and we're enjoying it quite well, and it's actually getting quite good now. I mean, it's shaping up. We've been having some great shows. We did
just good,
a dandy show in the
pulling it back on you.
You're putting it back on me. Sounded great in the Fox Theater in Atlanta last Sunday night. I'll tell you, we just knocked their socks off.
That's
down
a nice
there.
Place to play too.
Yeah.
What did do you still do Edmund Fitzgerald?
Oh yeah,
that was a real biggie. Did you get tired of doing that?
No, I think that's probably one of the best songs which I ever came up with.
That
it was
type
also
of song,
a topical song, too, which is good.
I was going to mention the topicality of a lot of your music. Ode to Big Blue, which is one of my favorites. The Canadian Railroad Trilogy, basically telling stories. And you've also always done love songs, but it seems like more so on your new album, there are more love songs and less of songs of a topical nature.
Yeah.
Is that just because you didn't have anything in particular to write about, or?
Well, that's one of the way it came out, you know.
Did you have a bunch of songs and you pulled down 12 or 13 songs and put them on your new album, or?
I had 22 songs and I whittled that down to 10.
10.
And they were all written in, say, over the last couple of years, with the exception of The Circle is Small, which was an old tune that I always wanted to redo. But it was not available to me. And I made a deal this summer, a business deal, to get that song back, and I immediately then re-recorded it.
It was your song, and it wasn't available to you?
That's right.
How did that work out?
Well, it... you mean how did it happen?
Yeah.
Well, I just got to a publisher who was supposed to sit on it and give it back to me, and I never got it back, and there were seven other songs involved in the proposition, too. And we just, when we settled this whole thing out, I got all the songs back, and we made a settlement.
Did you have to buy them back?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that weird, buying back your own music?
I wanted them to be in my own catalog.
Yeah.
So, fortunately, through the years, I haven't had to do too much of that. I mean, I've been burned a few times, but, you know, you always get burned occasionally. Or I should say you get burned occasionally, but... you know, you kind of learn as you go along, because I run my own business affairs, too, you know.
That's the way you learn, really, by getting burned a couple times.
Well, you can learn a lot from Al Grossman, and he's probably the best manager that ever came down the pike. And I learned a lot from Al. And after my contract expired with him, I just decided to run my own office, set up my own office, which I did, and it's worked out quite well, actually.
So you're pretty much your own business manager, and you have a...
Well, my sister looks after the business, and all that sort of thing.
You can't really do too many things yourself, or you get bogged down. I know for a fact that Stevie Wonder tries to do that, and he hasn't been out on tour in about 5 years. He tries to run too many of his own things.
Well, he has artist consultants handling all of his concerts for him anyway in Los Angeles. Mm.
Do you ever want to play ice hockey arenas and things like that? Or
well, we do.
Are you content with smaller halls like Northrop? I know you're in Northrop Auditorium, which is about what 4,000 or something, which is a real nice size room for the type of thing you're doing.
Yeah, once a town gets used to you playing in a small hall, they don't like it when you graduate into a big hall.
Mm-hmm.
You more or less have to start there. Like, for instance, the Salt Palace in Salt Lake City, we started by playing in there. Well, actually, I did a couple of dates in Salt Lake City. I did one at Park City, you know, the ski resort one time. But they're used to seeing me in there in a 12,000-seat mm-hmm. hall, so they don't mind, you see.
Does it affect how you relate to your audience at all?
If I'm putting out sound, it doesn't affect me at all. But I do prefer to play in a concert hall.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it means doing double shows.